You're an important part of the Grace to You family. Hi, this is John MacArthur. Thanks for following along today by podcast or audio stream. Be sure to take advantage of the 3,000 full-length sermon downloads available free at gty.org. Now, today's edition of Grace to You.
There are all sorts of barriers to be thankful for, walls that insulate you from the elements, guardrails on those mountain roads, but there's another kind of barrier, one that does anything but protect you. Find out how to break through it on today's Grace to You. Every morning when the alarm sounds, you face a decision, one with eternal consequences. Of course, I'm not referring to the struggle to get out of bed or press the snooze. I'm talking about the choice you face to either go to battle against our desires, action, or attitudes that contradict God's law, or to allow sin to control you. So where do you stand with that war? How can you fight it more effectively? We'll consider those questions on today's Grace to You as John MacArthur will examine a critical aspect of your maturity as a believer, namely overcoming the barrier in each of us known as our sin nature. The title of John's study, Why Do I Still Sin? It's based on Romans chapter 7. So if you can, head there now as your Bible is handy, and here's John MacArthur with today's lesson.
Let's open our Bibles and look together at Romans chapter 7. Verses 14 through verse 25. It is a picture of the indwelling sin in the life of a believer. This is a very poignant passage. It is a rare passage in the Bible because it does something that rarely happens, and I cannot think of another passage that does this just offhand. What it is a series of laments. It is a series of plaintive cries. It is a series of desperate, sorrowful dirges. And they are repetitious. There is one, and then there is two, and then there is a third. And they basically say the very same thing three times. This is the cry of a broken heart, of a distressed soul, of a soul in great conflict. Now, each of these three laments follows the same pattern. Paul describes his condition, gives proof of it, and then describes the source of it. He describes his condition, gives the proof that he's in that condition, and then the source of his problem. Let's look at the first lament, verses 14 to 17. And we may spend a little more time on the first, because having interpreted that one, the rest will just be apparent to us. The condition is in verse 14, and he starts each one of the laments with a condition. First one begins in verse 14, second one begins in verse 18, and the third one begins in verse 20. And each begins with a statement of the condition. For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am fleshy, sold under sin. The word for tells us Paul is not introducing a new subject. He's continuing the same subject from the prior passage. That is the goodness of the law, the virtue of the law, in that it shows us our sin. The problem isn't the law. The problem is us. And the reason he's talking about the law is because the questioners who would have questioned his teaching would have said, well, when you preach salvation by grace through faith apart from law, you are speaking evil of the law. You're devaluing the law. And he says, not at all. The law is good. I'm sinful. The law does a good work. It doesn't save and it doesn't sanctify, but it does convict of sin. So he says, we know then that the law is spiritual, but I am fleshy, sold under sin. He begins with a straightforward affirmation that the law is spiritual. What does he mean? It comes from the Spirit of God. It comes from God himself. Thus, it reflects the holy divine nature of God. Just like he said in verse 12, remember that? Wherefore the law is holy, and the commandment is holy and just and good. Now again, let me remind you that I think you have to have here the testimony of a regenerate man. I do not see that unregenerate, unredeemed, ungodly people who do not know Jesus Christ have such perception of God's holy law. In verse 18, he says the same thing, really. I want to do God's law. In verse 19, I want to do God's law. In verse 21, I want to do God's law. Verse 22, I delight in God's law. I don't see such a delight in an unregenerate man's heart. But Paul then goes on to say, I've got a barrier to doing this, even though the law is spiritual. Here's the contrast. I am fleshy, sarkinos. I am human. I am earthbound. I'm physical. He doesn't say I am in the flesh. He doesn't say I am totally controlled by the flesh. That's not true. Look at chapter 7, verse 5. For when we were in the flesh, the sinful impulses which were by the law did work in our members to bring forth fruit unto death. We were in the flesh. I'm not in the flesh anymore. Verse 8 of chapter 8. So then they that are in the flesh, and you need to underline in the flesh in 7, 5, and 8, 8. In the flesh is an unregenerate condition. And his terms are very precise here. In the flesh is an unregenerate, unredeemed position. He says, I am not in the flesh. But he says, I'm fleshy. I'm carnal. Say, can a Christian be that way? Listen to this, 1 Corinthians 3, verse 1. And I, brethren, could not speak unto you as unto spiritual, but as unto carnal, even as unto babes in Christ. Verse 3, for ye are yet carnal. For whereas there is among you envying and strife, are ye not carnal and walk as men? He says to the Corinthian Christians, you're carnal. You're fleshy. You're acting in a sinful, fleshly way. We are not in the flesh, but listen, the flesh is still in us. We're no longer in the flesh in terms of being captive to it. Now look at verse 18. For I know, Romans 7, 18, for I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwells no good thing. He says the flesh is still there. I'm not in it, but it's still in me. And verse 25, with the mind I serve the law of God, but with the flesh, the law of sin. You're no longer in the flesh. The flesh is in you. And that is simply a term for our humanness. It could be the same term as chapter 6, verse 12, let not sin therefore reign in your what? Mortal body. It doesn't reign in your new creation, your new nature. It reigns in your mortal body. And so his terms are very consistent. Sin is in our humanness. Now, any Christian could make the statement in verse 14. People have problems with this. Let me see if I can make it simple. I'm fleshy. Could you say that? I can say that. I mean, it's true. You say, yes, but you're certainly not talking in technical theological terms. No, no, no. I'm just saying, could I say as a Christian, I'm a sinner saved by grace? I'm still a sinner. God help me if I don't. If I say, well, since I've been saved, I no longer sin. My wife will be up here to give testimony. See, the point is, I can say that. I can say I'm fleshy or fleshly, carnal. There are things in me that represent that. I get angry. I get irritated. I don't fulfill my duty as I ought to all the time. I don't maintain the diligence that I should in the pursuit of the things of God that I desire. I see my humanness, my fleshliness getting in the way of the accomplishment of all of the things that I ought to do. I'm insensitive to people when they need my gentleness and I'm not gentle. When they need my kindness and I'm not kind and so forth. I see myself as human. I see myself as sinful. I don't always speak godly to everyone who speaks to me in the way that I should. We can all say this. It's a general statement. The proof of it. Verse 15. Here's the proof. For that which I do, I know not. For what I would, that do I not. But what I hate, that do I. The self-righteous moral man may deceive himself, but a true Christian led by the Spirit won't. He sees the proof in him of indwelling sin. Notice the verse carefully. That which I do, I know not. And then later on he says, what I hate, I do. The word know speaks of an intimacy of love. It was said of Joseph that he had not known Mary. And I think its use here as a contrast to the word hate gives us the liberty of understanding it that way. And what he is saying is, that which I do not love. And that which I hate, I do. Which is another way of saying the same thing. Now that is a real psychological, personal, inner turmoil of conflict of the most profound kind. He says, my will is frustrated. It isn't so much that when he wants to do one good thing, he can't do it. It is that when he sees the law of God and he wants to do it all, he can't. You understand? It is not a debilitating thing that says, well, here I am as a Christian and I'd like to say a nice thing about this deal, or I'd like to do something good, or I'd like to do something honorable and holy, but I don't know how to do it. That isn't the idea that he's talking about one specific that he can't do. What he's saying is, there is a whole law of God that I want to obey, and I am utterly frustrated in trying to do it. And you know that frustration. No sooner have you done something right than you're patted on the back for doing it, and immediately you just did something wrong. You got proud. And you frustrate yourself, and you say just what he said, oh, wretched man, when do I get rid of this conflict? His will is frustrated. It isn't that evil wins all the time. It's just that he has such a high standard because the law is so holy, so just, so good, so spiritual, that when he sees the high standard of the law, he wants to win all the time on God's side. And any victory for evil looks to him like horrendous defeat. And that's why I say, and so often do I say it, that the road to spirituality is paved with a sense of your own wretchedness. Always. Not your own self-glory. Here is a truly spiritual man. This is a broken, contrite heart. This is a man crying out, oh God, I can't be all you want me to be. I can't fulfill all your holy and just and good law. And you know, there are a lot of Christians who aren't at this point, and it isn't because they're so holy. It's because they're so thin in their comprehension of God's holy law. Well, he's given us the condition and he's given us the proof, and now he gives us the source. And we'll stop with this one. Verse 16. If then I do that which I would not, I consent to the law that it is good. I mean, isn't the law's fault? Because I want to do the law. Well, you say, what's making you want to do the law? I'll tell you what's making me want to do the law. That new creation. That divine nature in me, that incorruptible eternal seed in me. That part of me that John spoke about when he said, if you're really born again, you won't sin. That new part of me, it really longs to do the law. It really wants to do the law. And so I affirm that the law is good because the good part of me wants to do it. You see? The law is good. Now then, verse 17. If it isn't the law that's bad, if the law is not my problem, now then, it is no more I that do it, but what? Sin that dwelleth in me. Now listen very carefully. You'll miss the whole thing if you miss this. The Christian has in his heart the sense of the moral excellence of God's law. The more mature that Christian is, the more profoundly committed to the direction of the Spirit of God in his life, the deeper his love for the Lord Jesus Christ, the deeper his sense of God's holiness, the greater the longing to fulfill the law. And since it is the best part of him that wants to fulfill God's law, then God's law must be the best. And so it isn't God's law that's the problem. The problem is sin that dwells in me. It's our humanness again. But here in verse 17 is the key statement to interpret the whole passage. In verse 14, he just spoke in generalities. And he sort of gave us a perspective of his unredeemed humanness as sort of dominating himself. And you and I know that experience. We get the feeling sometimes that sin just dominates. We just can't be all we want to be for God. Haven't you ever felt that way? We just can't be as powerful. We just can't be as pure. We just can't be as holy as we know his law wants us to be. And so we can say in verse 14, I'm fleshy and I see myself captured by sin. And that's a non-technical statement. That's just a general statement. And he says, I am fleshy. And he's not dividing himself into two. He's not saying, well, it isn't me. It's sin at that point. He's just saying, I'm responsible. I think verse 14 is very important because it says to the Christian that if you sin, who's responsible? It's you. And it protects us from sort of philosophical dualism, and this is being taught in many circles today, that when you sin, it's just your old nature, so let it sin. You can't correct an old nature anyway. Let it do its thing, and God doesn't hold you responsible. It's just your old nature. He says, I, and he accepts responsibility, and so must you. It's me. He's not two people. He's speaking in non-technical terms. When I see God's pure and holy law, I see my sinfulness and I say, oh, how sinful I am. And the more I understand God's law, the more I see how I am captive to sin. But I don't want you to get confused, he says in verse 17. And let me just clarify this. It isn't any more really I that do it, but what? Isn't that important? You see, now he's given you a technical distinction. Now, watch this. It is no more I. When he says de ukite, a negative adverb of time, from this point on, something changed. Now, since Christ has come into my life and I've been redeemed, it is no more that deep inner self in a technical sense. It's no more I that is doing this, but it is sin that hangs on. Are you beginning to understand the distinction he makes? You have to understand this in order to understand the character of regeneration. He splits semantic hairs in verse 17, not in 14. 14, he just makes a general statement. In 17, he clarifies by saying, now get it straight. It isn't really anymore I. It used to be I when I could say I was carnal and I was soul under sin and that was really all there was to I. But now it isn't anymore really the new I. It's just Galatians 2:20 all over again, folks. For I, that's the old I, am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet, it's not I, not the old I. Christ lives in me. And the life which I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. You see, he's saying, it's me, but it's not me. It's a new me. And that's what he's saying in verse 17. So after salvation, the part of man where sin lies no longer resides in his inmost self. It no longer resides in the ego. It's no longer there in the very substance of what that man is. That's recreated to be like Christ. And sin finds its residual dwelling in his flesh, in his humanness. And he says that in verse 18, in my flesh dwells no good thing. What is the source of Paul's problem? The condition? Conflict. The proof? I don't do what I want to do. I do what I don't want to do. The source, end of verse 17. Sin that what? Dwells in me. Indwelling sin. May I suggest to you that there's a big difference between surviving sin and reigning sin? Sin no longer reigns, but it does survive in us. I'll close with this. We're like an unskilled artist who has a picture to be painted, clear view. Maybe he's out and he sees the mountains and trees and rivers. He's got his easel, got all of his little paints, and he's ready to paint this glorious landscape. The thing is, he's a real klutz, and he can't paint stick figures, let alone landscapes. He has the scene to be painted in all its wondrous majesty. He has the paints to paint it, but he doesn't have the skill. He's debilitated by his physical incapacity. It isn't that he can't perceive it. It isn't that he doesn't have available tools. It's just that his clumsiness is in the way. The fault is not with the scene, is it? Nothing wrong with the scene. The fault isn't even with the paint. The fault is with the artist's inability. And that's really where the Christian finds his frustration. And I believe that's where we come to the point where we ask the master artist to put his hand on our hand, to hold our hand as we hold the brush and paint the strokes that we, independent of him, could never paint. And that's why we have to realize that the victory we do experience comes only when we yield ourselves to the one who can overcome the flesh. In Galatians, I close with this verse, 5:17. For the flesh lusts against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary to one to the other, so that you cannot do the things that you would. Sound familiar? Just like Romans 7. You say, well, I know that battle. How do you win it? Back up one verse. This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill, what? The lust of the flesh. I believe the Spirit can give us victory. But let me just warn you, the more victory you have, and the more you mature in Christ, and the more you see righteousness winning over sin, the more you will recognize the sinfulness of sin. And the more you will find yourself in Romans 7. It is a place for totally committed, wholeheartedly abandoned people whose deepest, most profound longing is to fulfill the whole law of God, and they are in great distress because they can't do it. And they cry out, oh, wretched man, when, verse 24, do I get out of the, what? The body. Terms are always consistent. When do I unload this baggage and get to glory and eternally fulfill the law of God?
That's John MacArthur helping you understand the war that rages inside of you if you're a Christian. Why do I still sin? That's the cry of every true believer and the title of John's lesson today on Grace to You. Well, we can relate, can't we, to Paul's frustration expressed in Romans 7. No matter how hard we fight sin, it never retreats, never dies. And I suppose, John, that some listeners may feel like the battle involves just one sin only makes the frustration worse.
Yeah, I know what you mean by that, Carl. The idea that there's one besetting sin, one relentless sin, one continual area of temptation in which a believer falls victim again and again to similar patterns. That is especially frustrating. Those are habitual sins. Maybe anger, jealousy, maybe gossiping, maybe stealing, lying. Certain forms of sexual deviation or immorality. treacherous sins, of course, in the arena of moral purity. And they become habits in our lives, and they become those familiar sins. Habitual sins are familiar sins. They're sort of our sinful friends, if you will. We've gotten used to them. We've gained a certain level of satisfaction carnally from them. And they always elevate themselves again in full view and tend to draw us in. The end result, God is dishonored. We wind up in misery. Ruined relationships can happen, and even worse. We have to deal with sins of any kind, but particularly those habitual sins. Let me tell you something that will help you. I have a message called Dealing with Habitual Sins. Here's the good news. We'll send it to you free if you just make contact and ask for it. No questions asked on our part. Just ask for the free message. It's a CD titled Dealing with Habitual Sins. It can be a great encouragement in your effort to rid your life of that besetting sin that keeps showing up again and again. And also, those you love and care for are struggling in similar areas, maybe with different sins. This will be a help to them. It doesn't focus on a specific sin, but besetting sins. Request a free CD today, Dealing with Habitual Sins, free to anyone who asks.
To help you see your sin the way that God sees it and learn to fight it with the weapons that He supplies, be sure to request this free CD lesson. It's titled Dealing with Habitual Sins. Mention the title as you contact us today. Our mailing address is Grace to You, Post Office Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. Or send your request by email to letters@gty.org. Remember, you can also give us a call. The toll-free number is available around the clock 24 hours a day, 1-800-55-GRACE. Or fax your request to area code 661-295-5871. Whichever way you contact us, just ask for John's CD message, Dealing with Habitual Sins. It's yours with our compliments. Now, for even more help in turning sinful habits around, remember John's current study is available too, Why Do I Still Sin? You can purchase the two CDs. It could be a life-changing resource for you, or you could give it to a friend who's wrestling with sin. Place your order when you call 1-800-55-GRACE or get the CDs from the website gty.org. The cost of the CDs is $12 and shipping is free. You can get the two MP3 downloads right to your computer, your iPod, or your iPad. They are free of charge online at gty.org. Again, the title that you're requesting, Why Do I Still Sin? And now for John MacArthur, our broadcast engineer, Rick Dre, and the entire staff, I'm your host, Carl Miller, thanking you for joining us today. Please do come back tomorrow for another half hour of Unleashing God's Truth, one verse at a time, here on Grace to You. You can buy any number of products to soothe sensitive skin, teeth, and eyes, but there's one type of sensitivity you never want to lose, as you'll hear on the next, Grace to You.